Sarah Grillo here. Welcome back to my podcast. Today, I am so honored to have Steve Sandusky with me. Hello, Steve. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I'm great. So, Steve, before we get into the podcast, and today's show, by the way, for everyone listening, is going to be about communication and how to be more of an influencer with your communication style. Love this topic. Got lots of great things to say. But, Steve, before we get into that, tell me, what are you working on now in your business?
Well, a couple of things. One is I've got a long history of coaching financial advisors, so I still do some of that, work one-on-one with advisors in a coaching capacity. But also, I am a partner in another company called ROL Advisor with my business partner, Mitch Anthony. And that is a business that is super exciting. And we have created some digital tools for financial advisors that enable them to have richer and deeper discovery conversations with their clients. And so our focus is on helping advisors put their clients' life at the center of the conversation, not their money. And that is a business that I'm spending a lot of my time on these days. And we've had some great success with advisors. It's really resonating with them.
Yeah, amen to that, brother.
Yeah.
I think that's great because, and I think we're going to talk about this a little bit today, but you know, the communication in that first relationship is so important and sets the tone for the entire course of everything you do together. I think a lot of people really get it wrong and have the focus be on things that, you know, don't necessarily help them understand the person's life. Like you're saying, I love this. So great to have you today. So what can you tell me would be like the number one thing that advisors can do with their communication to have more of an influence?
Well, I think one of the mistakes in our industry is that too many advisors, they all look the same. They sound the same. In fact, I've even been on financial advisors' websites where they have the exact same language on multiple advisors have the same language on their website. That's probably because they might be using the same company that puts together these template type websites. So I think one of the most important things that every financial advisor should be focusing on is how are they going to differentiate themselves? And I know that's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot in our business, but it is really something that advisors have to really be thoughtful about and figure out how can I position myself in my business? How can I determine what it is that I stand for that is different from other advisors out there, and how can I more effectively communicate that to my ideal target audience? So I think that's probably one of the first things an advisor needs to do is just get real clarity on who they are, what they do, why they do it, how they do it, for whom they do it, and then put together a messaging and branding that communicates that to their ideal audience.
Right. I love that you just said that because I think you can have all the communication that you want, but if you're communicating the same message and it's the same brand, we're a fiduciary. We've been in business for 30 years. We focus on physicians. We focus on business owners. How many advisors are saying that? And I say it all the time. So you say it in a nice way about how to set yourself apart better, but I'm a little, you know, I live in New York City, Steve. I'm a little bit real. You know, I say it, don't be a cliche, like in my episode one. Gets me I do my rants about it. People rant back a little bit, but it's good for my Twitter, you know, following.
Well, and that's actually one of the ways to stand out is to take a position and be really strong in that position. Because as you well know, one of the important keys of successful marketing is that not only are you going to attract people with your marketing and your branding, but you're also going to repel people. And so by you in your personal brand taking a strong position on a particular topic, you're going to attract people that are like, yeah, Sarah, that's exactly right. And other people may just dismiss you. And that's totally fine because you don't want to work with hundreds of thousands of financial advisors out there. You want to just work with those people who really connect and resonate with who you are as a person and the way that you want to do business.
Totally important to acknowledge that because I do hear this all the time from advisors as well. Oh, I don't want to be the advisor for veterinarians because I don't want a dentist coming to me And then what am I going to do if it says I work with veterinarians on my website? I myself have branded myself as an advisor. I think people are more attracted to your personality and they think you're smart and good at what you do. I actually think if you're focused on a niche, for example, I think it doesn't really matter that much. I have a laser spa salon or laser hair salon. I don't even use any of these services, so I don't even know, but this is my client. You know, they're like a beauty salon, right? New York City. They're my client. I've had construction, IT, interior decorator, you know, I've had all across the spectrum because I think at the end of the day, they're paying you because they want to get results. Sometimes the niche focus can lead to better results, but sometimes people might say, I like Sarah, I like Steve, I like Bill, I like Betty. I don't trust anyone else. I want this person.
Right. Well, and I think there's different ways that you can think about a niche. So one could be, I work with physicians or I work with veterinarians. So it might be an occupational type niche, and that's fine. That works because you can go narrow and you can go deep and you can become an expert in the specific things that might be unique to that particular niche, and that's fine. But what you just described is you're going maybe across industries, but I would imagine though that there's still probably a common thread in the service that you provide that is appealing to the people in all those different industries. So while you may not have a niche in the traditional sense of the word where you maybe focus on a particular industry or a particular demographic or psychographic, I'll bet in the way that you conduct yourself and deliver your services, there might be a common thread in that appeals to people across different industries. But at the same time, there may be people in those industries that don't like the way that you do it either. So I would also argue that perhaps you still have a niche from that standpoint.
Yeah, I totally hear you on that. Well, hopefully more people like you than are repelled, right?
Well, again, you know, we're not talking a lot of people. So, you know, if you're a financial advisor, you only need 100, 150 or so quality clients and you can build a very nice business. And then if you want to build a company, then you just add more advisors who each have 100 or 150 clients that they work with. And again, I guess one other thing I want to just mention here quickly is this idea of the business model. And I think mm-hmm. that's something that people don't talk enough about in our industry is that mm-hmm. what I just described here of an advisor having 100 or 150 clients, that is a particular business model where I will work with those people who can each pay me anywhere from maybe $10,000 to $20,000 per year. And if I find that 100 or 150 clients that are willing to do that, I can have a very nice business. Now contrast that with other advisory business models where maybe you work with much smaller clients, charge a lower fee, and you'll need a whole lot more of them. And in that particular business model, it's going to be maybe more high tech and less high touch versus the first one I mentioned is more high touch, but could also have high tech. So we really have to think about the business model, and that helps drive the type of services that we deliver as well.
Yeah, and the business model is changing. I was just at Betterment yesterday recording a show. It's going to come out on the podcast probably in a few weeks. But this is something that is very important to think about when you're looking at your margins and your profitability, because technology right now is many advisors feel causing fee compression in our industry. Embrace the technology, and you can find a way around that by using the technology for the lower margin, the more operational aspects of, you know, onboarding and the investment management, and then offering that higher touch service, higher value. And that's a part of the business as well that I think many, many people just in business are unaware of. What are the margins on the different services that I'm offering?
Yeah, and I think Betterment is a great example. And I've had John Stein on my podcast a couple of times. The first time was several years ago when they just had about $900 million in assets under management. And today they're at many billions under management.
$20 billion or something.
Yeah. Yes, it's some big number. But what's interesting about Betterment, as we talk about these business models, is last I looked, they had about 360,000 clients and or accounts, and they had 10 investment advisor representatives on their they're in their RIA. So that means each of their quote advisors has about 36,000 clients.
Now, of course,
Betterment is not designed to deliver individual service, but what they discovered was even these people who were coming to them because they want a digital investment experience, some of them still want to know that I can call someone if I've got a question or if the market's volatile and I'm a little concerned. Mm-hmm. And so that's Betterment's business model. It's very, very, very high tech and very little individual touch. So that's a business model. Their pricing is maybe 30 basis points or so.
Right.
Contrast that with a typical traditional advisor who may be 1%, 1.2%, that's very much high touch and might have 100 clients. So again, that's really thinking about the business model. And then that also helps determine the type of technology that you're going to use to implement that business model.
Right. And they have a whole division called Betterment for Advisors. That's what I was talking about. I was talking to Kara Reisman.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Like they're not even pretending to want to be. See, the advisors are all, I'm competing with the robos. They want to help you. Actually, they don't want to be you. For the advisors that are listening to this, check out Betterment for Advisors. I'm going to have them have the show ready in a few weeks. Stay tuned for that one. So it's really important to understand how you can leverage this technology to actually resist fee compression rather than fall victim to it.
Right. And I think most advisors today are understand that idea that technology can very much be your friend as opposed to your foe. And just like with the robos, I think most people today are understanding that they can embrace that type of technology, just like Betterment has the Betterment for Advisors, where we can use that type of technology to automate our investment activity, which then will free up the advisor to spend more of their time in the relationship part. And that's where I think the real value that a financial advisor delivers is really in that relationship. It's really about understanding their client as deeply as they can, their hopes, their dreams, their fears, their aspirations. And then by understanding that, they can put together a better plan that meets not only their financial needs, but also their life needs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think about it, this is changing, I believe, but many advisors have grown their businesses by getting referrals. How are you going to be more likely to get a referral? Scenario A, in which you're focused mostly on, you know, getting those documents in order and helping them upload them to the system and doing tax loss harvesting once a year, twice a year, because that's all you have time for, right? Or focusing on higher value aspects of the relationship, such as, I saw that your beneficiaries were incorrect in your 401k and you had your ex-wife on there, right? Who's recently remarried, or I noticed that you have no succession plan in your business. Why is that? You have a special needs child. Let's talk about things you may not have thought before, but what the future is going to look like, right? They're
right.
Way more likely to get a referral from that kind of stuff.
Right, for sure. And when you talk about technology, I just got back from the Invest Conference in New York. And of course, that's all about fintech and what's all this crazy stuff that's happening with artificial intelligence and machine learning and chatbots and all this great tech stuff. What I see happening is, if you think of all of the services that a financial advisors deliver as a continuum from zero, meaning I don't do anything, to 100, which is, you know, the full spectrum of services that I can deliver as a financial advisor, what I see happening is technology continues to work its way up toward 100. And I'm just going to pick a number. Maybe it's 25 today, that technology can take over and handle 25% of what a financial advisor has historically done. And again, I'm just throwing that number out. I don't have any data to support that. But the point is simply that if it's 25 today, it's going to be 30, 35, 40, 45, 50. That number is just going to continue to get larger and larger and larger. And so the piece of work that a financial advisor can deliver, the value that they can deliver, I think, is going to get smaller over time because of technology. But the value that a consumer will place on that shrinking piece of value, I think, is going to continue to explode over time. And that's what I say to financial advisors is you have to really focus in on that sliver of value that you can provide that no technology will ever make obsolete, and be the absolute best that you can be at delivering that value. And clients will continue to pay you a lot of money if you are an expert in that sliver of value.
And what might examples be of that?
Well, I think, so one example might be you're working with a couple, and then one of the people in the couple passes away unexpectedly. And so the surviving spouse is meeting with you in the office for the first time after their spouse passed away. That's a heartfelt conversation. And hopefully the financial advisor has you know, prepared the couple in the eventuality that one of them passes away. But just having that conversation, being there with that surviving spouse, having the empathy to understand what they're going through and the wisdom to know what to say or what not to say in that particular situation is invaluable. And to prevent the surviving spouse from maybe making a bad decision in the wake of this emotional trauma. Okay, so that's something that only a human can do today, and no technology is going to replace that anytime soon.
Right, because technology is great at what technology does, and humans are great at what humans do, the human aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we'll never be able to do it better than the technology, and they'll never be able to do it better than us.
Exactly. It's just like no human is ever going to outsmart Watson. And we saw that with, Watson beating Ken Jennings at Jeopardy. So Watson will always know more than any human can and will be able to access that store of knowledge much faster than any human can. But where machines still fall down in this, but artificial intelligence is starting to kind of make some strides in this area, is just the ability to synthesize different things to connect the dots from disparate areas and reach conclusions and insights that really only a human brain and mind can do at this point. And so what I say to advisors is leverage your humanness. And yes, we have to use technology. I'm not a Luddite by any stretch of the imagination, but I also understand that we need to think about where technology is most useful. And then we also have to leverage our humanness because I have a firm belief that as the world becomes more filled with technology, that there is a direct correlation between the increasing pace of technology with the desire for people to still be in community with one another. I think those two are growing at the same time. And I think it would be smart for advisors to really focus in on that community aspect, that relationship aspect with their clients.
If anything, I think technology has further isolated us. I think emotionally, as far as technology has come, I think emotionally, in many ways, human beings are still in the dark ages. We used to be associated in tribes, right? Mm-hmm. And there were when you were raising children, there were numerous people in your village or in your tribe that could influence the child. And then now, we came into communities and now, I know here in New York City, especially, it's just very segregated, and we have the kernel of our society, the family unit, mixed, blended, broken, however you want to say it. And what does this mean for human beings, and what should advisors know about how to penetrate in and how to influence, how to reach with their communication? How do you do that, given like what I said? I think emotions are tough.
Well, they absolutely are. And it's interesting that you use the word tribe or tribal. And I agree with you. I mean, when I think about when I was just a little kid and I'm probably a fair amount older than you are, but growing up many years ago, it was very much a neighborhood where all the moms, and I don't want to stereotype here, but all the moms were pretty much stay-at-home moms, and the moms would get together during the day, the kids would be running around outside in the yard, and the moms would be drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes,
in my neighborhood, I could go to my neighbors and shoot baskets in their basketball net, because I didn't have a basketball net. I could go in their driveway and they'd come home from work and see me shooting baskets and be like, "Hey, Sarah," it wasn't like, get out of my
house. Right. You know what I mean? You're trespassing.
Right. It wasn't like that. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I, you know, this whole thing about tribes, I think is super interesting. And on the one hand, we've lost a lot of that connection from the neighborhood, as we've just been discussing.
Right. And yeah. Connection from each other, connection one person to the next. We've lost that.
Right. But what I think is replacing it is, I don't want to call this a new type of tribalism, because the tribalism has been around since the dawn of humans. But our tribes now we're so polarized. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a political conversation, but just to make the point, if you think about our Democrats and Republicans here in the States, those are like the new tribes today that many of us identify ourselves one or the other, and that's almost become like our new tribe. And so, again, as this relates to financial advisors, I think the more that you can create, and I don't want to use the word tribe, I really like the word community better than the word tribe as I work with advisors.
I know some people actually, I have a client from South Dakota, and they told me that tribe has a negative connotation in South Dakota, by the way, which I mean, I just know Seth Godin's book or what it is, the
right.
Tribe book or whatever, and he kind of popularized that term. So I didn't even know about this stigma.
Right. Yeah. And so I like the word community. I like the word connection. And I've also been a big fan of helping advisors create communities with their clients. I think that is also something that financial advisors can do, is that rather than thinking of your clients as all like individual disconnected people, I think there's tremendous value when a financial advisor can get their clients together and connect them, whether it's, you know, a lot of advisors will do quote client events, which is great, but even think about maybe getting clients together that are around a common idea, whether they, you know, they love fine red wines or whatever, and you start maybe a red wine club among your clients. I mean, just as a simple example, that any ways that advisors can do to connect their clients with each other, I think will add a lot of value.
That's a great idea. But back to the original topic that we were discussing in the podcast about influence and communication. So establish the brand. Now, what would you say are the next steps that are actionable for advisors?
Well, and maybe we've been talking about this, but just this whole idea of connecting with people on an emotional level. And oftentimes when you look about, read about marketing or hear someone talking about marketing, they'll say how important it is, you know, for people to know, like, and trust you. And I agree with that. However, what I would say is I would get rid of the word like, and I would replace it with love. And I would say you want people to know, love, and trust you. And you want to work with clients that you love, and you want clients to love you. And I have what I call my rule of hugging. And that rule is that you should only have as many clients as you would feel comfortable hugging. And so it really gets down to this emotional connection. And I'm not talking, not a romantic emotion, obviously. I'm just talking about, I really care about these people and I want them to succeed. I want to make sure that I take care of them like I might take care of someone in my family. And I think most advisors, you know, they got into this business because they're caring people and they want to help people. But I think if you can just place even more of an emphasis and an intention on this idea of really loving your clients and having that connection, I think will go a long way toward being able to do an even better job and add even more value for your clients.
Yes, and I agree with that. I have also found that financial advisors in general do tend to be, I would say, on the more sensitive end of things, you know, in terms of personality. That's a generalization, but they most of them are motivated to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
And families. I have found that advisors tend to be very family oriented.
Right, for sure.
And right?
Yep. And yeah. And I think anything that advisors can do from that standpoint, and that kind of gets back to this idea of the community and the connection, I think those are all related. Okay,
but see, here's the thing. I think advisors, you know, loving their clients or having their clients love them, sometimes love isn't enough. Love, I don't think, necessarily equals connection. So how do you communicate in a way that gets the emotions out there, brings them to the forefront?
Yeah. Well, it would get back. One of the ways to do that is through story. And I think all financial advisors need to become better storytellers. And because story is one of the ways that we can really connect with folks. And there's,
by the way, that's how we used to communicate in the quote unquote tribes, right? Right. I don't even want to say the word, but tribal behavior was storytelling.
Right.
Oral narrative storytelling. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it gets passed down from generation. Yeah. It gets passed down from generation to generation.
Right.
And so, you know, our business, too much of our business revolves around facts. It's around past performance. It's around this product or that product. And, you know, here's some of the descriptions. But here's the problem. Facts don't have the power to change somebody else's thinking. Okay. Because what happens is if you're sharing facts with someone, it's going to, you know, butt heads with the facts that that person already knows.
So or this with their emotions.
Right. But here's where the story comes in, though, as it relates to emotions, is that if you're trying to influence someone, you're not going to influence them or change their mind by just sharing a bunch of facts that are going to overpower them. Instead, what you need to do is you need to start with a story. And that story needs to be emotional. That story needs to have a point, and it needs to have a truth to it. And then when you share that story and the person who's hearing that story, all of a sudden they open up and they may have that aha moment. That story may connect and resonate with them. And then once you're at that point, now they're open to hearing your facts. And so the sequence here is important. We need to start with the story first, and that opens them up to potentially be receptive for your facts that will follow. So it's story first, then facts, and then that is one way that we can help influence people.
Yeah, I love that, because let me tell you a story about that, actually. Once, when I was an advisor, I had this businesswoman that came in for a consultation, and she was very standoffish with me because it was a referral from somebody who I think she didn't want to be pitched to. I think she was curious about what I did, but she just didn't want to get sold, you know what I'm saying? And she was wary of me doing that. So she was very icy. We've all had that meeting, right? Advisors who are listening to it, you know what I'm talking about. And I think she mentioned something about like not trusting somebody, or somebody kind of tried to take advantage of her. And I was like, you know what? This meeting is going so badly that I might as well take a risk. And I was like, you know, I was like, hey, Megan, let me tell you a story. And I told her the story about how, and this is something I actually don't talk about that much because it was just so painful for me, that once there was somebody way before, you know, I'm with obviously my Antonio and we have our kids together, very in love with him. But way before him, there was somebody that I was involved with that a guy that and this was so like such an embarrassing mistake, Steve. I can't even believe I'm about to like release this information to thousands of people, but I actually loaned him money. A no-no. Like my older self and wiser self would never have done this, but I was younger and I whatever, right? I loaned him a considerable sum of money. He basically took off, never heard from that guy again. A week or so later, I found out that he had actually been involved with somebody else, have never spoken to the guy since. And I was telling this woman this story, and I'm like, and so as a result, when I came to know Antonio, there was one day when Antonio had something, you know, like he's a salesperson and someone made a sale and like he put the money in the wrong place or something. He's like, oh my gosh, like my boss is getting mad. And I had to give him like $20. And I was like, he asked me for $20. Antonio asked me for $20. And I'm like, I can't do that. Like a measly $20, you know? And mm-hmm. it was like I had this blockage up, right? Mm-hmm. And now look at me. I trust Antonio now so much. It was clearly the wrong person to have that attitude with, because now I have a life and three beautiful children with him, you know? Mm-hmm. So the point of that story was to make the woman feel much more comfortable, and that's exactly what it did.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing that you have just done. You have shown vulnerability. And that is one of the other important keys to influence, is how can you expect the people that you're talking to be open and genuine with you if you are not the same with them? And so it's important as an advisor that you also show some vulnerability. And it's really interesting because just in the past couple years, in conversations with advisors, in conversations on my podcast, it's been amazing how many times the word vulnerability has come up in those conversations. And so, like I said, what you just did here, you were showing some vulnerability. So that makes me feel closer to you, more empathetic with you and the situation that you're going through. And so I think the more that advisors can open up, the more people will be able to really connect with them. And I don't mean in, you know, a sappy way. And I also need to make clear that what I'm talking about, this is not a strategy. This is not a tactic. This is about being genuine, authentic, sincere, who you are. And so it has to be with the right intention. It's not just, oh yeah, I heard Steve and Sarah on this podcast and they said I need to be
natural. You have to let it happen. It just be open.
Exactly.
Like I cried. I actually cried in front of one of my clients once because she was pregnant and she had preeclampsia. She was in the hospital. I didn't know what happened. And I just have had children myself. And it was always my fear of having preeclampsia and having the child delivered early and what would happen. And I'm actually even tearing up like now as I talk about it. It's so awful to even think about, but I started crying in front of them. And let me tell you, it changed the whole relationship.
Right.
They felt so much closer to me and so much more. Like she was a lawyer, like very, very factual with me and like suspicious and skeptical of everything I said. And it just changed everything. So,
right.
But I do have to say that this is now coming to a close here because I only have, I think, 40 minutes on this Zoom webinar. So, Steve, anything, let's say like three things just to summarize, and then we got to hop off before we get kicked off here. But what are three things that you would say to summarize how to modify your communication strategy to get more influence?
Well, I would say, you know, we're just talking about here is story. And I would even encourage you to go so far as to put together a list of your different stories. And they could be a mix of personal stories, things that have happened to you. They could be client stories where you change the names and some of the circumstances so people don't know exactly who you're talking about, or other stories that may go back many, many years. And so just have a kind of a list here of stories that you can bring up when the situation might be appropriate. A second thing would be just this idea of vulnerability and just really having more self-awareness of who you are and be more open to sharing your story about that so that people can feel like they are more connected to you. And then I think a third thing would be this idea of really having more clarity on who you want to work with, why you want to work with them, what you can offer them, why they should do business with you, why you're different, what makes you different, and really take a stand with that and be willing to not just attract potential clients, but also be in a position where you're repelling people that don't fit that.
Right, right. Great. Okay, Steve. Well, listen, we're going to wrap here, but thank you so much. I have so enjoyed this, and I think you've been so helpful to my listeners. Thank you.
Yep, I've enjoyed it, Sarah. Thank you.
Okay. All right, I'm going to cut it here. Everybody, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, and stay tuned for next time. Bye, everybody.